Welcome to Variant Frequencies. Month to month, our podcast brings you fiction stories from a different channel. Sci-fi, fantasy, horror, and some odd bands in between. Visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com. This episode of Variant Frequencies is a creepy story by Matt Wallace and narrated by Ann Stringer. The following story contains graphic descriptions of violence. Listener discretion is advised. And now, Children of the Androphagi by Matt Wallace.
The cloth was linen, grease-stained and reeking of gun oil and mothballs. Pax unwrapped the shotgun carefully, like taking a baby out of its swaddling clothes, the old police-issue Ithaca with its worn wood and scuffed steel. There was a rack filled with them in the NYPD wing of the Justice Museum, what used to be One Police Plaza. Some put their faith in arcane gods. Pax believed in the dependability of old-world hardware. He didn't need electronic triggers or programmable fire rates, new-age Glock 40s with their built-in tactical lights and sighting lasers. After a century and a quarter, the works inside were still pure Colt 1911 anyway. Guns got prettier and their gimmicks more esoteric, but his gig wasn't pretty, and he'd leave esoterics to the Freemasons. Pax didn't do a 40 caliber job. Certainly not on the two hyenas he'd tracked down after sunset. He'd learned, after being unassigned from homicide and running down these cases off the books, that investigating the beginning took too long. You started at the end of the trail and reverse-engineered the answers. So he'd started with the buyers, every name in his private PDA index, every wholesaler with a record of meat trafficking. The fourth one on his list tipped Pax to his real quarry. When Pax surprised them, they went for his guts like he was a gazelle, went at him raw, real ghouls. One was swinging a meat cleaver. The holes he put in them were so big they answered his questions with echoes. The only answers Pax was able to get before the hyenas cackled their terminal breaths. Not the way he planned it, but then it never was. It would take a day to run DNA and chase down leads off known relatives and associates and aliases. And that meant paperwork, the cardinal sin of his mandate from the bosses. So what he had, immediate and revealing, was their body art. They both wore brands familiar to Pax, chemical brands burned into their sides. Pax knew the mark. It was a logo, a Haitian loa, and a skull hunter playing patty cake. And there was another tattoo, a girl's face inked on Meat Cleaver's bicep. Long pointed nose, long pointed chin, a lot of facial hardware. Pink hair molded into stalactites that hung off one side of her face. Jenny plus KB was scrawled underneath the rendering. Pax could only assume Meat Cleaver was KB. When he added them together, simple 2 plus 2 logic, it meant he had to find Yanni Svitter. He tried Svitter's rat hole apartment in one of the old buildings uptown. Inside a year, the whole joint would be condemned, knocked down and replaced by another building, roughly the same size, but with four times as many living units. Starvation couldn't stem the population boom. But Svitter was out. Pax left a card tacked to one of the Cannibal Rocker posters on his wall between a Hansel and Gretel duo. He recorded a short message in the card's tiny vid window with some superlatives that made it clear how important getting in touch with him was to Svitter's future, or lack thereof. In the 1930s, 52nd Street between 5th and 6th Avenue was home to the speakeasy. In the 2030s, it's all about the breakdowns, where they mix biochem cocktails and spark the ash of the dead, sucking its acrid smoke through bone pipes. The big ticket is, of course, shooting distilled endorphins. Yes, they'd found the last fix, and it was inside the human body all along. Pax shut the back lid of his car and tooled up 52nd with the cut-down stock of the Ithaca wedged under his right arm, hidden by the folds of his suit jacket, a deadly stinger inside a wool blossom. He eyed all the staircases going down into the sidewalk. After 5 or 6, he spotted the sign sprayed on the bricks at the top of the steps. The biohazard head with its popped skull cap, a straw sticking out, and a freaky little aboriginal drawing of a man siphoning from it. That was Svitter's favorite spot. At the bottom of the staircase, Pax found a burnout light bulb and a crimson door as thick and heavy as the lid of a tomb. In the dark, it looked like blood underwater. He sledgehammered it with his fist 4 times, staring into a small dark depression set at the top of the door where, a moment later, the disembodied head of the breakdown's doorman bloated and then panned and scanned to the size of a plum, bald and meaty and tinted viridian. "You got the words?" it asked him. The doorman's voice broadcast in surround sound from speakers embedded in the cubbyhole. Pax stared at the hologram, as sheer and shiny as glass. He caught his curved reflection in it, just another one of the gaunt people, hollow-cheeked and sallow-skinned. Even city employees were on half-protein rations. "Eat the rich," Pax said. "That was last month. You want to try again or save us both some time and just get fucked now, cop? How about bang? How does that work for you?" Pax racked the Ithaca's slide and brought the thunder. The breaching rounds picked the door's bolt lock apart with the fervor of a coroner on speed. He gave it a shoulder, deep, and the door lurched aside. The corridor beyond was more like an upholstered tunnel. The lush vermilion fabric stretched like an accordion over the walls gave the impression of a very large, plush rectal canal. The doorman stood 6'4", and all of it was cowering under the hollow imaging setup. Pax gave the Ithaca slide another stroke and leveled it at him. "Police! On the wall! Now!" The doorman grabbed 2 handfuls of the corridor's fatty layer. "You got a warrant?" the corner of his mouth asked. "No, and I fucking hate cliches," Pax said. Introducing the back of the doorman's skull to the knotted mahogany fist at the butt end of his shotgun. Walking down the corridor, he felt a little like an endoscopy probe. A few ripples of the breakdown's in-house muscle came hustling at him from the other end. Pax tipped the shotgun's bore and pumped around into the corridor ceiling. Chunks of fabric and bits of stone rained down on the shoulders of their hip-bone shoulder pads like bird shit. "On the floor," he instructed them, punctuating the order with another rack of the Ithaca slide. "I'm not here for your cash or your patronage." The muscle hit the deck, and Pax stepped over them. A few yards up the corridor opened into a converted sub-basement with fat stone columns that kept the whole shebang from caving in. Everyone who wasn't flopped for the night scattered when they heard the thunder. The rest were either too zagged out or cow-eyed with fear, thinking it was a raid. They were the dabblers. For some, the breakdown was a chaser. For some, an appetizer before the main course, like what Pax was planning to get into later. But most went there to skinny dip in a wetsuit, enjoy pieces without crossing that final line, the one where the flesh passes your lips and there's no washing the taste from them. Pax wove around the breakdown's old coffee tables with their spinning centrifuges, sifting the blood of junkies and hobos for the molecular deconstructors that retrofitted the chemicals as an enzymatic methylated high for the breakdown's patrons. He found Yanni Alpha Spoof Svitter floating in a gravity chair. Alpha Spoof was his hack handle. He did low-rent information trading, snuff porn, nothing blockbuster. But he was jacked into the scene, one of Pack's high-yield informants. "Bus boy!" Svitter was broadcasting from Dreamland. He'd probably been through a tasting menu of the breakdown's human chemicals. "Detective John Paxson," he announced to the rest of the breakdown. "Lone wolf of the Carrie Canny scene. Nobody move." Pax crouched beside the gravity chair, leaning his Ithaca against one of the stone columns. "How deep in the pool are you, Svit?"
"Say what?"
"Where's Necrophrasiac set up tonight, Svit? I need to know."
"Aw, man, zero out on the interrog. I'm too liquid to fold under questioning right now, BB. I'm..."
"Hey!" Pax flicked Spitter's closed eyelids. "On the clock, Svit, come on." It was useless. Fucking useless. Svitter was ass-deep in the plasma pool. By the time he resurfaced, the site would be dismal and any affairs would come too late. Pax skinned the sleeve of Svitter's acid-cured shirt. He hadn't updated the digitat between his wrist and elbow since yesterday. Most of the time, digital skin work like this was just a simple scrub job so bikers could replace some chick's name on their bicep. Svitter's had the full mosaic treatment. Isochronous real-time updating, full laser printing capability. It even had its own USB port embedded in the crook of his elbow so he could customize it at his leisure. Pax rifled his bony frame, coming up with a PDA. When he turned on the monitor, he found the system was locked, passphrase protected. He didn't have time to take it to someone who could crack the thing. Pax thought about Svit, what he knew about the kid, thought about his hack nest back at the apartment and all the dolls and lobby cards and wind-up toys that littered the desk. Svitter was a real vintage paraphernalia junkie, and he was predictable. It was worth a shot. "Soylent Green is people," Pax said. The PDA's monitor lit up. A head came flying at him from the other side of the screen. Svitter's. He said, "Don't try and spoof the alpha dog, Zag." He looked up at Svitter. If he was capable of feeling it, Pax would have given him a smack. He took another shot. "To serve man is a cookbook. Eureka." The jazz on the monitors dissolved, and there was Svitter's operating system. He yanked the USB plug out of the top and jacked it into Svitter's arm. He found the Digitat program in the PDA and accessed the update. As Pax watched, microbleachers in Svitter's pores cleansed the skin slate, then subcutaneous inkjet started filling it back in. A zigzagging red line snaked between freak symbols, a system of neoglyphs they used to represent landmarks. Svitter promoted for necrophagiac. The Digitat was a map. The ghouls who ran it updated them every night with new coordinates. Now all Pax had to do was roust one of these hopheads who knew how to read the freak symbols. Necrophasiac is a floating carrion rave, the maggoty crotch of the cannibal underground. Hell on earth. But Pax didn't have time to sit in his car stealing himself, didn't have time for the first four stages of grief. So he dug a deep hole in the back of his brain and buried it there. Everything he had to accept about the situation. He was going in alone. He was going to see the dirty, the sick fest. He was going to see fetish they hadn't come up with names for yet. He was going to see all these things and blow right by them, with a smile, with a wink that said he was into it. Because if he interfered, if he even swallowed the wrong way, it'd be the butcher's block and he'd be the third or fourth course of the night. Pax footed it up the street in leather and a metallic vest. He'd scummed up his hair, too. From outside, the mesh and razor wire perimeter of the salvage yard looked like nothing more than junk corroding quietly in the dark. But Pax spotted a couple of hoppers slip through the fence and ferret into the maze of crap. Pax followed their lead. There was a path inside, beaten through the industrial jungle, narrow and winding. Absinthe glow sticks lit the way. 2 dozen yards into it, Pax heard lightning and a hell shriek. He jerked his head toward it. A rat scavenging in the junk had gotten itself fried. The mounds of scrap were electrified to deter scalers from going over it. Pax had to take the path. He had to walk right through the front. On, and Pax started to hear the music, the death tech they blasted at the rave, louder and louder until finally he reached the tail end of a long freak line and he saw it. An archway, necrophagiac, spelled out in tiny arms and legs across the top. He was pretty sure they were doll limbs. Pretty sure. The bouncer working the gate was draped in skins, new leather. He had a face full of knockoff Maori tattoos and the Wendigo, inked across his chest in bloody calligraphy. A real tribal fixation. It was a lot like slices of uptown white bread with Chinese characters penned in their flesh. The Wendigo was backed up by a security quintet swilling cheap vino, flamethrowers slung across their chests instead of rifles. Because if there was trouble, why ruin good meat when you could douse it in wine and give it a light braising? When it was his turn, Pax rolled up his sleeve. "That looks fresh," the bouncer said of the chemical burn between, on his forearm, the Loa and the Skull Hunter. They were both bright red. "We like fresh," Pax said. "You just be careful. Scent like that attracts all the wrong kind of business. Unless that's what you're looking for." "Just came here to find the girl of my dreams." That set the bouncer off laughing, big, scary gut laughs. Pax slipped past him. It was all going down in a dirt clearing, the huge cul-de-sac curve of the scrapyard's great wall of crap. 300 bodies that ran the gamut from fresh to 3-day-old jammed together. The smells that were converging created their own nexus of foul. A deadline of chicken wire ran around the clearing, giving 2 feet of space between the party and the electrified scrap mountain. Here they worshipped the mad cow, a bastardization of El Chupacabra, the Mexican goat killer.
It had the big Deadpool eyes, but instead of a razor mouth, there was the long pink-capped snout with a ring through its septum. Crimson banners hung all over like the Animal Farm Reich. Hax remembered the cows. He'd seen some of the first ones drop on a trip through farm country with his old man as a kid. They were wheeling by a fenced-in pasture, and a big piece of prime Montana beef grazing by the post suddenly went all herky-jerky. It twisted and writhed and leaped up onto two legs. Hex was only five. He thought the cows were trying to dance. He thought it was funny. Then he saw it again and again and again. After a few million times, it stopped being funny. When they torched the last cow on an offshore quarantine pen, Pax had just about forgotten how to laugh. Then the disease jumped species. The whole rave was pointed at a dais made on a rotting Camaro flatbed. The butcher's block rose from it. The body of the poor bastard strapped down there didn't spasm with every whack of the knife. He was a long time gone from feeling it. They harvested them from fresh graves, made backdoor deals with coroners, with ambulance techs. Most of this one's thighs were gone, his calves, hands shaved of the tender fillets. The butcher, tall and wearing a surgeon's mask with plastic vampire teeth glued to it, was carving up the abdomen, killing tools arranged behind him like bars on a macabre wind chime. Once the meat was cut, he slapped it onto platters and the creep chic flop girls carried it around the clearing. There were trash can cook pits. There were those who liked it raw. There were those who brought their own picnic. The news media would crack this carnival someday soon. It was all over the alternet, a million dot zoms and counting devoted to the scene. Just a matter of time before the legitimate web hounds picked up the scent. Hell, the PD could raid Necrophagiac every night if it really wanted to, but why? It was contained. It was the freaks and carries feeding on the dead and forgotten, a necrotic zombie subsisting on its own infected limbs. No reason to let it get out. It was only when they grabbed some Manhattan Suits kid off the street that the bosses got nervous. The PD, the mayor, the governor, everyone too far outside the world Pax lived in to consider. And that's when Pax got paged, got the call to bust the table before Middle America saw the mess. A part of him, the red devil that whispers from your shoulder, hoped he wouldn't be able to bring it home that night, wouldn't find the kid in time. That part of him hoped a county coroner ended up finding pieces of her in some ghoul's stomach next week. They'd nominate the kid for Christhood and start a big messy crusade against cannibalism in her name. Then he'd be a real detective again, instead of some dirty uncle keeping dirty secrets. Pax came across a group of doom chasers from DeKalb Avenue sitting around two industrial spools chewing fresh adrenal glands. There were bowls filled with the baby slug-looking things in a viscous syrup on top of each steel disc. Secretion juice dripped on their pretty gang colors, running down the cannibal Holocaust tableaus painted on the leather of their sleeveless doublets. "Say, man," he yelled over the music, "I'm looking for some of my freaks. They run with KB. You know them? We're your freaks, white meat." One of the doom chasers, an alpha male with alligator eye contact, said, "Sit," he commanded. "Have a chew." Alligator Eyes scooped a yellow-tinted gland from one of the bowls and held it out, wriggling. Pax shook his head and kept moving. The flesh mechanics were in full swing, plying their trade, putting on floor shows. They had wires rigged into the skulls of a John Doe coma patient smuggled out of Mount Sinai that afternoon. The ravers siphoned their excited endorphins through intravenous feeds, getting off, falling off, getting it on. They had a phantom limb band all rigged up, severed arms filled with more magic wiring. They dangled them over the frames of electric guitars, hovered them over a drum kit. When the mechanics flicked a switch, they played Mary Had a Little Lamb. They played the Star Spangled Banner. Sidestepping the stagger procession of a zombie cult, Pax bumped shoulders with some jackal goth wearing a shawl. A feet shawl. Feet as in fetus. Usually animal, but not always. He and his three friends looked like Sweeney Todd barbers from Canal Street. The jackal goth held the end of a leash. The leash was attached to a collar. The collar was attached to a kid, maybe 12, 13. A Casper kid, pale and wispy as a ghost, track marked, already a junkie. Probably a runaway. The jackal goth had written veal across the kid's forehead with India ink. Hax couldn't let that shit slide. His better angels turned into shrieking harpies, beating their razor wire wings against his brain.
Got that $100 you owe me, cocksucker?
Hax said before he dropped him with a forearm to the throat, a solid exposed radius snatching the air right out of the Jackal Goth's body. His friends just stood there. The end of the leash fell to the dirt. Pax kicked the Casper kid in the ass to get him moving, and he scurried into the crowd. It probably wouldn't make any difference at the end of the night. He was another half hour circulating through the rave, and just when he thought the stink was going to suffocate him and the sights were going to melt his eyeballs, Pax spotted her. She was sitting on a piece of junkyard art, drawing blue and red and green hits from a bong. It was Jenny, of KB's tattoo fame. There was no mistaking the likeness. Pax had the zip strip half run up his sleeve. Before he was even sitting next to her, he threaded it around both their wrists and pulled it tight, lashing them together.
I'm not into this shit, fuck me!
Jenny said. Shut up, Pax ordered, jamming a snub-nosed revolver against the outline of her ribcage. I'm a cop. You need to walk out of here with me right now. No gab.
You got a head full of maggots pulling this shit? You here alone? Man, you are candy. They're gonna lick you off of their fingers tonight.
That won't matter to you. You make a fuss. You see how I got this muzzle angled? Round will go through your ribcage, tear across your heart, end up somewhere south of your cerebellum. Pax dragged her off the yard decoration and started hauling her through the crowd. He hadn't pushed their way through 6 feet of bodies before he stopped.
Shit.
Pax muttered. The bouncer from the front gate. One of the ravers must have tipped him. Pax had been asking too many casual questions, repeating the same name too many times with a face no one recognized. The Wendigo was combing the rave with a couple of necrophagiac's house ghouls, and they'd spotted him too. The bouncer pointed at Pax and Jenny with the finned end of a machete from across the dirt clearing.
You!
He yelled into the music. Heads started turning toward them.
Cut me loose,
the girl harpied at Pax.
Cut me fucking loose, man. I don't want to get torn up too.
Then you better run with me, he told her. Now. He pulled Jenny into a fast break that quickly became a kamikaze run. But they weren't dive bombing toward the front gate. Pax emptied the cylinder of his snub-nosed into the air, the shots ringing loud and striking, even as their reverb was crushed back to the earth by the pounding death tech. It hacked a path through the crowd, straight at the bouncer and his ghouls. The Wendigo didn't look surprised or even alarmed. On the contrary, he smiled. He raised the machete in his hand just as Pax kicked in the bouncer's chest like it was a door he was taking down. Same mechanics, same force. But he wasn't a door, and without any hinges to stay the inertia, his body went flying. The edge of his boot heel snagged the deadline, sprawling him against the scrap heap. It was a Frankenstein experiment gone wrong, crackles of current and sparks bursting from the joints of rusted machines. Supercharged metal fried the Wendigo to his bulging eyeballs. In under a minute, every piece of pink flesh was scorched black. Bloody magma cracks circled his torso. His hands fused around the handle of the machete, its wooden grooves catching fire and sparks shooting from the end of the blade like a torch. His leather traps became part of his epidermis, and his face swelled and swallowed every blue ink vein of tattoo. And when the electrical current had enough, a regurgitation of yellow sparks spat him into the dirt. At first, the ravers were like little kids jumping up and down under a 4th of July night. They delighted in the sparks and the screams. They whooped and whistled and waved their arms. Then something else happened. Gradually their arms came down. The cries and catcalls died away. The constant chaotic motion driven by the blaring death tech music ceased. That stillness, contrary and frightening, wrapped Pax. But no one was looking at him. They'd forgotten all about Pax. It was the smell, the blood, the cooked flesh. It saturated their senses, seeped into their brains. It spelled out two words like a black incantation that turned man to beast. A passphrase that unlocked a root program, the primitive base matrix from which all mammalian psyches are constructed. Fresh meat. The demon frenzy filled every empty soul wafting in the waves of body heat that swept the clearing. It took possession, absolute and inexorcisable. Pax saw the deadly devolution from vultures to velociraptors, saw them becoming the wild things, thought he saw their fire-cast shadows over spoiled earth, morphing into shapes with tails and maws and eyes set on the front of their heads. They fell on the bouncer, clawing and moshing to peel the first, the meatiest strips, gnashing their teeth and growling territorial growls. Not the mournful moans and dead-eyed mechanics of zombies, their transformation was inhuman on an entirely different level. Pax didn't stick around to watch, didn't wait for them to start turning on each other. He pulled Jenny tight to the chest and moved her around the undulating body of the crowd, pistol-whipping anything that came too close, anything with teeth. And he didn't stop until they'd cleared the rave, the gate, the winding maze through the juice scrap heap, everything that wore the taint of what was happening back there. Everything but the night. Your boyfriend, KB, he went poaching uptown. Snatched a kid, a girl, 8 years old, from one of those pretty domed play paradises on Central Park West. Jenny was sitting side saddle in the front seat of his car, her wrists zip-stripped to the window frame. "So talk to KB about it," she said. I did. It was a real short conversation. Pax peeled the necrophagiac brand off his arm and slapped the strip of synth skin across the roof of the car. The skin underneath, the real stuff, itched. Jenny was watching him. "You're that cop everybody on the scene talks about," she said. "The busboy, the PD's cannibal killer, clearing the table after the freak feast, right?" "Yeah, me and Davy Crockett, both legends in our own time. Tell me about KB and the snatch." At first, he thought she was going to give him more lip, but in the end, she just looked tired, defeated. Pax saw that a lot working these cases. "KB and his brother Jab, they did it. Jab didn't want any part of it at first, but KB's always been the ambitious type. He figured there's big bank in one of those plump uptown kids. Milk-fed baby fat, premium tenderloin, he said. Not like the Ethiopian daycare we got going on down here. I never laid eyes on her, I swear. Last I saw KB, he was going to find a buyer. He didn't come back." "Where'd he stash her? They weren't carrying any cash, so I know they didn't make the connection yet." "Man, that's all you care about, isn't it? You suits. I bet it isn't even about the girl. Just shitting yourselves, thinking if some lawyer's brat gets put on the menu, maybe it'll wind up pixelated on Newsweek.com. That they'll start hypertexting about what's really going on in the outer boroughs." "Either way, the job's the same," Pax told her. "My sister got poached, you know. Got sent down the soup bone pipeline to Shy or Philly or wherever the fuck. So where were you then, huh? You gonna be a tax man for the zags that did her, too?" "Hey, you want to tell a story? I'll get you a real attentive audience. I'll throw you back to the fucking dogs. Every ghoul in that rave saw us leave hand in hand, and soon as they're finished burping up that bouncer, you can bet they'll start remembering. You want to be around when they achieve recall? Huh? Where's the girl?" "I don't know!" "Then where would KB stash her? How the fuck? Think, goddammit!" Jenny was quiet. Pax watched her try to get her head straight, digging deep. She really believed he'd feed her to necrophagiac. "KB has a hide," she said. "In Bed-Stuy, under a bot repair shop on Fulton Street. It used to be clubhouse for his gang, the Buzzards. Bunch of dumb shits. They're all locked up or they're dead now. Only KB and Jab ever use the place anymore. If the girl's not there, then I don't know." Pax took out a Spyderco Horus and thumbed its curved beak blade. "All right," he said, cutting the zip strip. "Get out of here. Lay low for a while." Jenny rubbed her wrists, afraid to leave the concealment of the car at first, then all too eager to get away. "Your sister," Pax called after her. "What was her name?" "Du jour," Jenny said sarcastically. "The fuck you care?" She clomped up the street in her big combat boots. Between the Clydesdale footfalls, Pax heard a much smaller sound, like sniffling, like tears. When the sun broke over the city, Pax didn't know it. He had an ultra-space-efficient unit in one of Brooklyn's retrofitted 4,000 blocks, one room, windowless, like a prison cell with a better paint job. But the total darkness and his bed hidden within it gave him solace. The musty smell of sheets that needed washing, that dead skin must. It seemed Pax couldn't escape it, the death stink. It hounded him like angry spirits. He found the little girl, whose name was Merida, in the hide Jenny told him about. KB, or more likely Jab, had given her a ratty stuffed caterpillar to keep her company, and Pax found her clutching it in the dark, shivering, afraid of the monsters we all know lurk there when we're 8 years old. She asked if he was one of the bad men, and Pax said no. She told him she'd named the caterpillar Isis, and he said that was a good name, that Isis had been a protector, that she kept Merida safe while everyone looked so hard for her. Then she wanted to know who he was, and Pax just told her a friend, in case anyone got around to asking later. Pax didn't call it in over the PD's airwaves. He tipped the department anonymously, then watched from a fish stand across the street, chain-smoking and dropping caffeine capsules, as radio cars and black sedans with government plates swarmed the hide. 3 hours later, Pax didn't bother turning on the plasma monitor in the wall above his head to find out it was all over the news. Every station with a different angle of the tearful reunion and the abductors were still being sought. KB and Jab wouldn't even go down as kidnappers, much less the half-assed cannibal traffickers they actually were. And Pax wouldn't go down as their shooter. That's the way everyone from the chief on up wanted it, unconnected. Because American citizens don't eat each other. They can't, not with our savagery bag full of neo-reproductive terrorists bombing sterilization plants every other week, food rioting, and bloody beef wars abroad disguised as foreign policy. We have enough problems, but it wouldn't last. Pax knew that. In 10 years, maybe even 5, there'd be a division in every police precinct in every city dedicated to crimes of cannibalism. Maybe he'd even end up running one of them. No more busboy jokes, no more back-alley death squad shit, no more suicide missions without backup. His name in an actual, official police report detailing a collar he made, on the books, on the record. A dream of the real, as the new metahuman philosophers would say. In the meantime, Pax rolled over and closed his eyes. He wouldn't open them again until he got the next call. Then it would be time to do the job, and he'd watch the children of the Androphagi dance their freak dance one more time, their heathen dance of teeth and flesh. Flesh has no end, and so the dance never stops, not once it's begun.
Thank you for listening to Children of the Androphagi by Matt Wallace, narrated by Ann Stringer. Please visit us at www.variantfrequencies.com and follow the links to our online journal. There you can learn some of the story behind our stories on Variant Frequencies. We would like to thank the Radio Memories Network and Libsyn for helping us expand our audience.
G'day, I'm Lynn Griffin, a sci-fi fangirl from Down Under. Do you like science fiction? Want to know more about what's happening on the scene with books and movies? What's newly released or just want to see some science fiction fandom? Come watch my science fiction news highlights video podcast with short snippets from Star Wars, Stargate, Battlestar Galactica, and mix in with some Cthulhu and maybe some Predator. And there's going to be much, much more. Too much sci-fi to poke a stick at. Check it out at lynn.libsyn.com or just type in Lynn in iTunes. I'm the chick with the blonde hair and the cyber goggles. Also, dinosaur puppets, Cylons, and lightsabers are welcome.